Wow. All right, we are back at Channel 9 Live. This, please tweet your questions in for Scott Guthrie, a.k.a. The Goo. Everybody knows who he is. Go to twitter.com and create 140 tech, whatever. Just do this. So, hey, Scott, thanks for coming on.
No, my pleasure. Thank you.
And congratulations on the announcement today. So we're live for RTM releasing on Thursday.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Excellent. So one of the things you guys talked about was sort of the notion of Silverlight moving to the living room. Can you talk a little bit about that with set-top box and Silverlight?
Yeah, one of the things that we've always kind of been focused on with Silverlight has been, how do you enable experiences everywhere? You know, whether it's on a PC, whether it's on other operating systems, regardless of the browser. Last month we showed a lot of great scenarios involving the phone. Mm-hmm. And this week for the first time we're showing Silverlight running on embedded devices. Specifically home devices, things like cable boxes, TVs, DVD players like Blu-ray devices and things like that. And so what we've done is taken Silverlight and we're running it now on multiple chipsets. So this week we're showing it off on both Atom chips as well as Sotheby's 4100 SoC devices.
Nice.
As well as Broadcom MIPS processors.
Nice.
What we showed in the keynote was a couple things. It was kind of cool, and I'm not sure everyone got exactly just how cool it was,
though,
which is, you know, the entire UI that we showed in the keynote was actually Silverlight, not just the kind of the traditional, kind of TV-like experience for finding stuff. That was all just XAML.
Okay.
And then we showed basically running apps, games, and media, obviously, as well as streaming integration and Twitter and Facebook and things like that, all in there. And what was cool is we built basically the entire app that was running on the set-top box.
Nice.
With like two guys in, I think, or three, two people in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 1,500 lines of XAML, a couple hundred lines of code. And, it just works now. Literally in your living room. And there's no PC connected. It literally would just be like a DVD player or, set-top box from your cable provider you plug in and you can take advantage of it. And so that, I think you're going to see, especially in the media space in general, this sort of, fusion of how you get media over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I want to be able to watch TV and I want to be able to share it with my friends. I want to be able to integrate multiple feeds. I want to be able to, watch an event like this on my TV
mm-hmm.
without having to have a PC connected. And this is sort of enabling technology that's going to make it possible.
Excellent. I mean, you could imagine like going to a gallery and downloading Silverlight applications for your television.
Yeah.
That'll enhance your experience, created probably by the set-top box OEMs or whatnot.
Yeah.
So let's ask some. We got some questions, of course, from the audience. When will we see a set-top box with Silverlight? So in other words, when are we going to see this really happen?
We're not announcing any particular. Vendors today. We're showing off kind of at our NAB conference, which is also conveniently happening here in Las Vegas this week, which is the big National Association of Broadcasters.
Yeah.
It's about 90 or 100,000 people show up there. We're showing it off on the stand on our booth for the first time.
Okay.
Part of that event is networking and connecting up and you'll see some announcements in the future, I think.
Excellent.
Yeah.
At Ev Grun asks, when do we get a Silverlight ribbon bar?
Well, there are actually a couple of Silverlight ribbon controls out there from, a couple open source ones and a couple from some great control vendors. I'm trying to...
Yeah, there's a couple out there, and it's something we've actually talked about with the toolkit as well in the future, but there's nothing in our toolkit today for that.
We don't have built one in the toolkit, but there are ones out there, and if you search for Silverlight ribbon, you should find a couple of them. Out there.
Although we do have a ribbon in the Rich Notepad sample that Adam Kinney developed that you could use the code for.
Yeah, so if you go and look for the, I think it's called the Rich Text Box sample?
Text Box, Rich Notepad, something like that, yeah.
We'll tweet kind of a pointer to it.
There you go. Good question. So scrolling, double-click, working out of the box. So in other words, with Silverlight 4, is scrolling and double-clicking, working out of the box. I don't necessarily understand.
I think this refers to... The scroll viewer control?
Maybe like mouse wheel scrolling, which the answer to that is yes for controls that are enabling it for.
Yeah.
Okay.
But double click is less so.
Yeah, so we've had, I think, for more than one release now, programmatic scrolling support, so you can intercept the scroll command. All of our built-in controls like list box and scroll viewer and rich text edit and things like that, if they have focus... if you use the scroll wheel, then you get automatic scrolling support inside your app. But if you want to, you can also capture the event and handle it yourself. It should work both in-browser and out-of-browser, I think.
Yes, yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, there's been a lot of Blend 4 questions, by the way, coming up today. So here's one, sort of, where can we get a good end-to-end Blend 4 model view controller tutorial similar to the new eBay demo? And thanks for this week. That was from Shaggy Yaggy.
Yeah, cool. Well, the Blend 4 beta that we shipped at Mix, I believe, has the model view model support already in.
The templates, yeah.
Yeah, the templates are already in.
Okay.
And you can, with the Visual Studio 2010 Silverlight Designer, you can actually wire up commands through the property grid with model view as well. So it's good feedback. We'll get some tutorials out there.
Yeah, and a quick plug, we've got a Silverlight TV episode coming up, actually, that shows how to do that. So
okay, perfect.
It'll be on in a couple of weeks.
There's the face of Silverlight TV right there.
There it goes.
So John will have some great samples you
can see. And I just want to point out, there are, like, humans here, so we can go old school, go analog, and you guys can actually ask questions as well. Raise your hand, we'll try to get a mic to you. But we're going to go back to Tweet World. Can I put out-of-browser behind a pay button?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in terms of from a monetization perspective, you absolutely can charge for the applications, and so both in terms of, you know, requiring people to download it or you know, pay before they download the app. The other thing that we see a lot of people do is you know, you download the app and the app might have some basic functionality, and then you can light up if it's a you know, someone has a subscription service or something like that. And so definitely all those types of business models are supported. You know, we support you know, for media, we support DRM with Silverlight. Our new offline DRM support, you can even do things like you can download it for a specific period of time. So you can do kind of a rental style model. You can do a download to own. You can transfer to devices. So there's you know, we don't enforce any specific business model with Silverlight. You're welcome to do anything you want in terms of making money. And, you know, we're trying to provide the hooks so that you can monetize anywhere you want. And, you know, and help you be successful with your business.
Excellent. So, I mean, you know, being a moderator, I get to ask a question too. So we'll get back to you guys. You're number one. So you guys have released 4 versions of Silverlight in 2.5 years. How do you do that? So in other words, I mean, because that's unusually fast. You guys have always been really fast. How do you iterate so fast? I mean, and especially given that you have to support multiple platforms. Can you just talk a little bit about your development process and how this works?
Yeah, it's a lot of people ask me that. It's been, I mean, it's kind of fun doing these launch events. You know, partly because it feels like just yesterday we did the last one, and I was realizing, I think 12 months ago or 12 and a half months ago, we were still talking about Silverlight 2. That was the only public, that was the latest public build that was out there, and now we're, you know, launching Silverlight 4. We have a really good team on it. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. In general, in terms of from a planning perspective or from a process perspective, I think we do a couple things really well that are kind of innovative. You know, one is we do have this sort of formal notion of kind of what we call a planning process.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll spend months before we start the release, you know, really doing planning. And so we'll do... You know, we'll stack rank all the asks that people have, and we really try to focus on scenarios. And so I kind of called out in the keynote, you know, version 1 was media, version 2 was .NET and kind of app enablement, version 3 was really graphics, and version 4 was business apps and outside the browser. And what we'll do is we'll figure out, okay, to really nail this scenario, what are the top features? What are the, you know, how do we bring it all together and connect it all? And so when you do that, what ends up happening is when you do a release, it adds a lot more pop to the release even than the features you have, as long as if you're not doing anything superfluous, if you're not doing people's favorite pet feature, but if you really focus it on what our customers want, that adds a lot of pop and a lot of zing to the release. And so we have kind of a planning set of folks that will work for months ahead of the release trying to figure out that list so that you know, when we start, we're really focused on what we need to do. And then part of the reason we move pretty fast is... we use a model called the triad model, but we actually alternate leadership roles on the different releases.
Interesting.
And so the team that worked on Silverlight 3, for example, you know, the day Silverlight 3 ships, the lead triad basically takes a break, and we do kind of a crew shift, and a new triad's in place the day after we ship.
Excellent.
And a lot of the Silverlight 3 triad's been working on the Silverlight 5 release.
Interesting.
And so, you know, we ship on Thursday, and on Friday, Silverlight 5 begins. And in that way, people are rested. They've been doing planning.
Sure.
The people that have done the planning are accountable for the release.
Absolutely.
So you can't just do the planning and then say, well, someone else screwed it up. You know, they're in charge. And, you know, it means that we're ready to hit the ground running and move pretty fast. The people that are working on Silverlight 4, you know, they're now working on the next release after Silverlight 5. We'll give them a little bit of a break, but you know, they have until Monday. But
Scott rules with an iron fist.
My team is throwing things at the screen right now. But but that's helped us be kind of pretty agile.
Excellent. So let's get back to these great questions. And again, tweet your questions here, twitter.com. Tweet here at @CH9Live. Jay Rutsey, Dry Utsy. I'm not going to pronounce your names anymore if they're too complicated, man. So. When will Silverlight Toolkit RTM for Silverlight 4? So when's the toolkit going to RTM?
Well, the versions of the toolkit come out. There's different versions every couple of months, generally. And there's a version that's coming out with Thursday's release. And some of the new features in there are the context menus, a new control that we pulled in there. It was a strong ask when right-click support was added in. Mm-hmm. There's also some other controls and some other features as well. Silverlight Unit Testing Framework's got some upgrades for it. And there's... the busy indicator is going to be in there. There's a couple other things as well. Some new themes, I believe, are going to be in there.
Cool.
So all Thursday.
Excellent. So at ChrisNova10, how do you use Silverlight Pivot apps with highly dynamic data?
It's a good question. I think the Silverlight Pivot control is a fully programmable control. So I think even if you have dynamic data sets, you know, you're pulling it from, say, a database. Mm-hmm. You know, you can pull that you can both dynamically generate the XML feed that we showed off in the keynote.
Right.
That was sort of, the one we showed in the keynote was kind of, we loaded it into Excel and statically created it. But it's just a URL, so you could write an ASP.NET app or page that's feeding that, and you could have it be completely driven off dynamic data.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. The CXML collection.
Yeah.
So, and just so people know, I mean, you guys are the Silverlight team. We also have a Pivot team who has written a Silverlight control. It was originally WPF.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, you'll mention some of the things that we've tried to do is, you know, again, be scenario focused. And so with Silverlight 3, we added a bunch of hardware graphics acceleration features. And the Pivot team came to us and said, wow, you know, this basically gives us everything we need. You know, I think there were a few things with Silverlight 4 they wanted. We added, for example, hardware perspective transforms with Silverlight 4 with the final release. And a few other things that they asked for in terms of capabilities. And, you know, you saw, I think, in the keynote today, the picture doesn't do it justice. You really need a video of just how fast the transitions work.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I've never seen the first demo of it. It was so impressive just to see. You didn't even listen. When I first saw it, I didn't even listen to what he was saying. I was just watching the demonstration.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cool thing is, you know, even if you just have, let's say, you know, photos, you know, you get HD cameras or, you know, pretty much every camera now is 5 megapixels or bigger.
Yes.
Just drop them in a folder, power up Excel, you know, link to them, hit export to Pivot, and you have a pretty amazing site now to view your photos.
Absolutely.
And so it's, you know, it's now easy enough that even just for consumer scenarios where you want to create a cool site, you know, it's easy enough to do.
Excellent. So back to these questions. Blob-o-matic, I remember you from yesterday. What's the long-term plans for keeping Silverlight synced between the phone and desktop versions?
Silverlight has sort of a single code base. And so we have a kind of master tree, and then you know, everything that goes into Silverlight 4 goes into the main tree, gets pulled down into the mobile tree, and likewise, everything we're doing in the mobile tree, you know, gets pushed up into the main tree as well. And so the nice thing is it makes it really easy for us to flow the features. And you know, what our vision is we have one Silverlight.
Sure.
You know, we don't have a Silverlight mobile with Silverlight phone. We have one Silverlight, and so. You know, you'll see all the features pretty much that we demoed today, you know, be on the phone.
Absolutely. Now, and you guys, of course, have gotten your binary, your install down to a really nice size.
Yeah.
But when you go into the embedded world, for example, the set-top box and certain phones, how do you guarantee that you could actually have one Silverlight everywhere with the same library, the same functionality, and I mean, you'd have to be able to, could you target at build time, I want this to run on WP7, and then it just puts what's native
there. Well, what helps is when you have one code base on our side.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you have two code bases, it's much harder to keep things in sync.
Agreed.
And so, you know, a big decision we made is we're going to have one code base, one core team that builds it. And that's helped a lot in terms of making sure that we stay in sync. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we will probably have, we'll certainly have templates for the developer so that they can pick, like, oh, I'm building a mobile app, or I'm building a desktop app, or in the future, you know, a set-top box app. Because, you know, even if you have one code base as a building an app, you know, you're still going to have different screen sizes, and you know, we do expect people to customize the UI differently.
Absolutely.
Depending on the device characteristics. But the goal is, you know, all the concepts, all the designers, you know, all the core code that you learn and write, the skills that you learn, mm-hmm. should be able to apply everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So let's get back to questions from Twitter. TacoMan667, will Silverlight on embedded devices only allow XNA apps like Xbox 360 development?
No, I mean, the demos that we showed today of Silverlight on embedded devices were actually XAML-based apps using, I think the demos we showed today were all written in .NET.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you can build any type of Silverlight app.
Question from the human?
Yeah.
From the human.
A lot of the demos you guys do, there's WCF Ria services. Oh, okay. Usually in the demos that have been done online and whatnot, WCF RIA services or radio.net services, it's usually what's used to kind of do that chatter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because it fits the Silverlight model best? Is it kind of unintentional that that's the push? Or I guess what other focuses with the other data sets? What else is possible? Is it best to use RIA, things like that?
That's a good question. So, yeah, when to use RIA versus other things?
Thanks for repeating it.
You know, I think you know, one of the reasons we came up with so broadly, Silverlight supports a variety of different ways to do data. You definitely don't have to use RIA services. You can use a WCF core programming model. You can use a REST-based model. You can just use HTTP and custom parse the result sets. With Silverlight 4, we're adding UDP support. So if you want to even do like UDP packets for multicast and things like that, you can do that as well. And so there's a variety of different ways you can get your data. One of the reasons we came up with RIA services, though, was you know, one of the bits of feedback we get, you know, across .NET and development in general, but also with Silverlight is, you know, I don't want to, you know, it's sometimes I have to figure out, here's five cool technologies, how do I put them together myself? And especially in a model where you're retrieving data, working on it, you want to bind it to UI, you typically want to display friendly error messages or validation messages. I want to do security both on the client and the server so someone can't spoof my client and try to bypass validation rules, and then I want to save it in the server. Like, doing all that manually, we certainly allow you to do, but a lot of people said, gosh, that's, you know, am I doing it right? You know, and you know, John has a giant book that tells you with Silverlight 2 how to do it. You know, what we try to do is to say, like, how do we make the 80 or 90% case, you know, much easier, much more prescriptive, and enable great tooling support for it. That's kind of what the impetus behind RIA services. It doesn't mean you have to use it.
No.
And there's going to be cases where you're going to want something that's off that 80 or 90% beaten path. We've tried to use RIA services. We build it on top of WCF. So it is just a WCF service. The validation and binding support is just built into the UI controls of Silverlight. So that's not a RIA service feature. So if at a later point you decide to step off that kind of 90% beaten path, you're not having to throw away a lot of stuff, but we try to basically streamline it so that for the majority of apps, hopefully RIA services gives you everything you need, and it's you don't have to be the put together your own car. You can have a car that's pre-built that you can just customize a few options.
And if I could add just a moment to that as well, one of the nice things about RIA services that the way I always explain it to people is if you haven't built large-scale applications before, it may not appreciate it as much. When you start building a lot of large-scale applications and you've done things like passing services up through the different layers, passing around data, validation, security, all the stuff that Scott mentioned, or even just doing business logic or having models in the server and the client and trying to keep them in sync, those things aren't impossible, but they're complicated and they're involved and a lot of times they're monotonous. So RIA services kind of takes that away from you, does a lot of that plumbing for you. So it's a nice feature to put on, but do you need it? No. You can absolutely write your own services and wire things up to Silverlight.
Excellent. So we're going to go back to Twitter, and then we've got a question from the crowd. So how can I access a HID device using Silverlight? Can I only do that with a COM object? And I guess the real question is, you know, how do you deal with COM and Silverlight together in an app? Say, add a browser.
Good question. What's a HID device?
A human interface device, I assume.
Oh, okay.
Human interface device.
I think it's okay.
Yes,
right?
Captain.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yes, Captain. Well, so there's a lot of input devices that we do support out of the box. So webcam, microphone being two. Multi-touch, obviously mouse, keyboard, etc. So those types of things work in, all those scenarios work in any Silverlight app, in browser, out of browser. Don't require full trust in order to do that. If you want to talk to a custom device, and so we showed that a little bit today with the National Instruments demo, where they were running a heat sensor hardware device on the desk. I think they were using a COM API to do it. Mm-hmm. And so COM does give you kind of escape mechanism that you can do richer stuff, whether it's talking to hardware, talking to local system, talking to office. Mm-hmm. That does require full trust for security reasons. And then over time, you'll see us, you know, we'll add more devices. As more devices become popular, we'll look to ways that we can kind of integrate them as part of that sandbox model.
Yeah, the most common denominator ones are the ones that are accessible without the full trust and COM. So.
Excellent. All right, so we've got a question in the audience here.
Just more media services, standard, I guess, regular services. Would it be a good decision, or would you recommend an existing Silverlight application that's working well with WCF services? Is there a benefit to moving to RIA services? What might those benefits be?
Well, generally, I'd say if you... So your question is about, you know, does it make sense to, if you already have a working app with WCF, should you move to WCF RIA services? You know, in general, I'd say if you have a well-working app today, unless there's a good, compelling business reason to change it, I'd recommend not. And once you have a business scenario that makes sense for it, then it's worth considering. But, you know, I tell people on my own team this, you know, if it's a working feature today, don't rewrite it unless there's some benefit out of it. And part of the reason why we layered RIA services on top of WCF is, you know, we think WCF provides a really rock solid foundation and a really rich customizable environment. So, you know, a RIA service is a WCF service at its core. It's not something different. It is a WCF service. It just has a bit more policy built in. So, you know, in general, if it's working well today, I wouldn't try to dramatically change it. There are some things with Silverlight 4 that you can optionally take advantage of, like the new validation features on the client are much richer. We now have, in addition to kind of iNotify property change support, we now have
iNotify data error info.
Big
long. We have a lot of long interfaces.
Yeah. We have some other interfaces that make it a little bit easier to do validation flow and error handling flow and things like that. And so you can use them with any raw WCF service, and then WCF RIA services takes advantage of them as well.
And you could also migrate, meaning you could keep what you've got already, WCF RIA services, and you could also, in your regular services, and pull in RIA services on top of that and not change what you've got already. So you could kind of do side-by-side for some of it.
Yeah. Yes. And there's some service features that are in RIA services today that you'll see us actually push down into the core WCF service layer as well. Originally, they were actually two separate teams. They're now actually one organizational team. And there were a few features that we added to RIA services that were like, wow, this is really cool. You know, some of the iQueryable support in terms of returning iQueryable, some of the validation rules and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, our plan is actually to say, oh, let's take those features and use them from any RIA or any WCF service. And you know, it's not going to break any code. It's just going to basically let kind of the base WCF service support it, and so and not require the RIA services base class. So, you know, we think hopefully, you know, we have a pretty good story now, and it spans from fully customizable to kind of more prescriptive.
Excellent. And by the way, there'll be a RIA services session here at 11 a.m. where you can actually dig in further. So back to Tweet. Do devices need managed drivers for Silverlight to access video streams, recording remote input? How does that work, actually, the way that you deal with drivers? Do you have a managed wrapper around them? What's going on?
Yeah, we don't need any custom managed drivers for Silverlight. We basically talk to the driver model on the system. So mm-hmm. both Windows and the Mac have well-known drivers for doing webcams and microphone and a Windows multi-touch and things like that. And so we basically use a standard operating system driver model.
Sure.
And so that means if you plug in a new camera into your Windows box, as long as it has a Windows driver, it works with Silverlight.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you leverage what the operating system is good for.
Yeah.
Where can we find, of course they're going to ask this, we have to always do this. You just released Silverlight 4, now we want to know about Silverlight 5. I mean,
that's next week.
Yeah, that's next
right?
week.
That's next week, so that's the answer for that one.
Yeah, I mean, what we know with Silverlight 5 is it'll be the release after 4. I kind of mentioned the parallel model that we use. It's kind of like hockey shifts. And crew line changes. So we do have some people who have been working on Silverlight 5 for almost a year.
Sure.
And so we do have some exciting stuff coming with it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next launch event where I can talk about it.
Excellent. Cosmatos, are you working on a set of multi-touch specific controls for desktop Silverlight for building full multi-touch optimized apps?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a good question. There was a toolkit that just shipped yesterday. I'm not sure, was that
the
WPF
Surface
only?
Toolkit? I'm not aware of that one.
Okay. Yeah, there's a Surface toolkit that just shipped yesterday, I think, for WPF. I'm not sure if there's Silverlight support or not within that or not. But definitely, I haven't tweeted it yet. I know Scott Hanselman tweeted it yesterday. So if you check Scott's tweets, it's there. there is a bunch of, I believe, controls for WPF that enable kind of full multi-touch scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if those are being ported to Silverlight or not, but they certainly could be conceptually in the future.
We are starting to see more and more multi-touch applications be written with Silverlight, mm-hmm. More than just the kiosk type applications that we've been seeing in the past.
Cool. So let's geek out just for a little while based on the question about hardware acceleration. We were talking about earlier before you came, Scott, about GPU accelerated experience, mm-hmm. right? So in a cross-platform world that you have, I mean, there's different ways to access and communicate with a GPU, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about how Silverlight deals with hardware acceleration across platforms.
Yeah.
Or talk to them about it, because it's their question.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm here, too.
Yeah, so I mean, if you we do support hardware acceleration on multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're running on, let's say, a Mac, we do composite, do hardware compositing using OpenGL on the Mac, which is the standard Mac graphics acceleration API. Different browsers on the Mac support control hosting in different ways. So I think I don't remember exactly the details of which browsers, but there's a few browsers where you can't actually composite OpenGL inside an HTML surface. So there we do hardware acceleration full screen on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
We do support it. And basically the way Silverlight works is internally we have a kind of a PAL layer, or platform abstraction layer,
yeah.
so that we can, all of our code at the higher level stacks does the graphics APIs, even our graphics engine then is abstracted so that we can port it onto different APIs like OpenGL or DirectX. And then we also do custom optimizations for certain GPU chips.
Excellent. So the higher level code just calls into essentially the Silverlight kernel, which handles distributing it to, I'm going to use the OpenCL stuff, or I'm going to use DirectX, or whatever.
And for example, like on mobile devices, like the Windows Phone that we showed last month, we also, specifically for mobile, it's super important because you typically have kind of weaker ARM chips.
Mm-hmm.
As your processors, which are a lot slower than, say, a typical Intel chip on a desktop. And so, they're obviously taking full advantage of the GPU is super important. For set-top boxes as well, the stuff that we were showing today, that is also hardware accelerated on top of the set-top box.
Excellent. All right, so question from the audience. Then we'll get back to the tweeters or tweeting questions. Thank you, guys.
What are the compelling reasons to use WPF versus Silverlight?
Good question. Yeah, it's a question a lot of people ask, which is, how does WPF and Silverlight relate when you use one versus the other? you know, our goal with WPF has always been, how do you build the richest possible Windows applications? And so if you want to build a large Windows app, you know, say Visual Studio 2010 or Expression Studio, you know, both of them are completely written now in WPF. You know, WPF provides a richness in terms of integration and features with Windows that, you know, is really unmatched with any library that we have. And so if you're trying to build like a giant desktop app, WPF is really your only choice coming from a .NET world to build that. And, you know, the stuff that we've done with WPF 4, there's a huge number of features. And, you know, probably the biggest one is just sort of building VS using WPF is kind of really battle-hardened, if you will, both WPF and the CLR. And there's just thousands of little changes that wouldn't make sense on a feature list. But you know, things like window focus management when you're doing HWin interop with native Win32 controls that are kind of really esoteric, but if you're building a giant Windows application are really important. And so we think WPF is the way to do that. If you're building an app that runs in the browser, if you're building a media app, and if you're building kind of a data snacking app or an app that runs outside the browser, but doesn't require the full richness that WPF provides in terms of Windows integration, that's where we think Silverlight makes sense. Mm-hmm. And our goal with each release of Silverlight and WPF has basically been to kind of converge the APIs. You know, Silverlight started off as a subset of WPF. As it's gotten richer, you know, we try to make sure that it stays a subset, you know, it stays a clean subset, and that anything we add into Silverlight, we then add into WPF, so that you know you do have a common programming model, a common skill set that you learn, and you can use it in multiple places. And I think, you know, with Silverlight 4 and WPF 4, you know, there's dozens of features I can point to in Silverlight 4 that came from WPF, and I can also point to dozens of features in WPF 4 that originally came from Silverlight, things like animation easing or cache composition, just to name two, or Visual State Manager. Those are now all built into WPF 4. They started off as Silverlight 3 features. So, you know, that's always been kind of our goal, and you'll see us continue to evolve that going forward.
Excellent. So we have a ton of questions coming in from tweeters. So we're going to play a little game. Let's try to get through as many as we can. Let's try to keep the answers at maybe 30 seconds, 40 seconds, depending upon you know how involved we have to get.
Sure.
But let's get right to it. And also, I'm going to ask questions that I've already been asked by I recognize names. So the entity framework doesn't make sense here. Is there any voice recognition instrumentation available in Silverlight 4? This is from Cool Nuts.
We don't have any voice recognition APIs. We do give you raw stream access to the audio input.
Yes.
So it is certainly possible to take voice recognition libraries and run them on top of Silverlight 4 and get voice recognition.
That sounds like a great Coding for Fun article right there.
So. Absolutely. You hear that, Dan? Coding for Fun article. Silverlight control, the speech-enabled Silverlight control.
And we are starting to see people do some cool stuff with webcam, where you can start to do kind of almost like the Natal-like interaction models.
Gestures and facial recognition,
Interesting.
So, yeah, I know a couple partners that are doing some cool stuff with that.
Could you have written Visual Studio, the UI in Silverlight?
No. I mean, certainly the program model concepts, yes. You know, the Visual Studio uses a lot of features.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so are there any new data grid control, any new data controls in Silverlight 4? Improvements to the data grid?
There's a bunch of improvements to data binding in general with Silverlight 4, especially around validation, error messages, async support. That's that interface that we were trying to remember what the name was earlier.
Okay.
But you know, one of the challenges with UI validation is often, you know, I need to hit a web service to look something up. How do I, you know, our existing UI binding models and WinForms and WPF are very synchronous. Mm-hmm. How do you go off to a web service and the result comes back and show an error message and set the appropriate focus later after the property has been set or attempted to set? You know, we now have that support in Silverlight 4. The data grid control, now you can copy and paste multiple cells and paste it into Excel, which is pretty cool. So I don't think there's a ton of new data controls, but there's a heck of a lot of new data features that have been added.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. So let's see here.
The main difference between Silverlight RC and RTM?
Yes.
There's not. I don't think there's any feature differences between or API differences between the Silverlight 4 RC and RTM. So if you have an existing app that works in the RC, it should just work on the RTM. You might need to recompile it, but it should just work.
It's mostly in the tooling. Yeah. You got the toolkit, which is now out, and then some of the tooling inside of Visual Studio.
Yeah. Probably the biggest change that we made between the RC and the RTM was around startup performance. One of the things that we kind of realized was that we had some regressions with the RC and the beta around our cold startup performance. So if you didn't have Silverlight running already, the very first time we were a bit slower than Silverlight 3. And so one of the big things that we did was with the final release that's coming out this week is did a whole bunch of optimization work around startup and specifically cold startup.
Okay.
And now we're actually about 25 to 30% faster than the previous release of Silverlight.
So can we geek out a little bit on that? I mean, what exactly is the, you know, how did you get faster? What were some of the problems? I mean, it's not, we all know about the startup time that the desktop experience can take because it's loading the whole BCL and everything else. So can you talk a little bit about what is the startup issue?
Well, thankfully there's no issue,
but
how does startup work? Well, one of the things that we did with Silverlight 4 that gives us a great performance win is we actually pre-compile your assemblies once you install Silverlight. So with Silverlight 3 and before, and Silverlight 2, we shipped sort of IL assemblies, and we, instead of pre-compiling them, we actually do what's called JITting, which means that the first time you call a method is when we actually convert it to native code, and then we run the native code on the processor. And you know that works well, except it means that you're basically having to JIT every time you call a method for the first time. And if you close the browser and restart it and rerun the app, we re-JIT it. And for performance reasons, we turned off a lot of optimizations that are in the desktop.NET version of CLR just to make sure that, that your app started up quickly. With Silverlight 4, we went to a model where, as part of install now, we actually will JIT, pre-JIT a whole bunch of your assemblies, all the ones that ship in the box, so that they're already native code and they're sitting on disk, so that we can then load them, and there's no JIT time over time. And as part of that, we can turn on our full jitter optimizations.
Excellent.
And that's why you get about a 2x code performance improvement between Silverlight 3 and Silverlight 4, is because we're using all the optimizations that we already have with desktop full .NET framework. We can now take advantage of Silverlight. The performance startup thing that we needed, so that, that helps tremendously with what we call warm startup, where the OS already has those images pre-cached because the first time you use them, it maintains them in memory for other apps to use them. The cold start work that we needed to do was, because they're on disk and they're bigger on disk, we need to do a lot of I.O. optimization to improve performance. So that's what we did between the release candidate and RTM, was to do some tricks to basically improve our I.O. throughput.
Awesome. And also, again, what you were saying earlier, NGen is what you're talking about.
Right? Yeah, we don't use the NGen that's in the .NET framework, so it's not a service, it's not running the background, but it's the same kind of take an IL assembly,
generate
image, native code,
and roll.
And work. That works on all Silverlight platforms.
Beautiful. So let's see here. Scott Gu said, you'll see all the features we demoed today on mobile Silverlight. So does this mean SL4 on WP7?
You will certainly see SL4 show up on Windows Phone 7. We're still trying to figure out timeline-wise when they show up. And a number of the Silverlight 4 features are already in Windows Phone 7. You know, some of the features we will probably bring into Windows Phone 7, but don't necessarily make sense. You know, a lot of the things we showed today around business apps, you know, in a touch, you know, consumer device, don't make as much sense. For completeness, we'll add them, but they're not kind of the high priority features. And so, what we have focused on a lot with Silverlight on Windows Phone 7 has been on the graphics optimizations, performance, touch, things like that. And so that's why we focused. We sort of said, you know, rather than add 10 more business app features, you know, let's make sure the phone really sings in terms of performance and is really zippy. But you will see all those features show up. Whether it will be the initial Silverlight or Windows Phone 7 release or the next preview or when, you know, we're still trying to figure out.
Absolutely. Steve Strong, is there a limit to the number of media elements you can have on the Windows 7 series phone?
I believe you can only have one media element at a time operating on the Windows Phone 7.
That's active.
Yeah, that's active.
Okay, so you can't have like one of those nice spinning things with multiple videos. And
Well, what you can do is you can take a video and then you can use transforms to cut it up. So you can actually have what looks like multiple videos. Mm-hmm. But because we're actually on the phone, we're actually using the video hardware on the SoC chipset. Mm-hmm. I don't think it supports multiple streams playing simultaneously.
Yeah, not active, yeah.
Sure.
That's a hardware thing
that
for all phones, actually.
Plus the bandwidth of the phone as well.
I mean,
5 Netflix movies at the same time.
So how does VS 2010 protect it against reverse engineering? That's not necessarily a Silverlight question, but how do you deal with that? For example, if I had somebody asked earlier, can I put a buy button on my offline Silverlight app? But it's written all in managed code. Of course, you use I can't remember his name.
Obfuscator.
To understand, you could use Obfuscator to kind of make it hard for people to reverse engineer. But you could reverse engineer native code if you're good enough. So can you talk about, answer that question?
In terms of, there's always a risk with software, whether it's native code or whether it's managed code or it's JavaScript code for that matter.
Yeah.
Of, people looking at what you're doing and trying to figure out how did you do it. Mm-hmm. Generally, I kind of think of it as that's just part of the business.
Sure.
In general, I haven't seen that many people, JavaScript, I guess, a lot of people do look to learn more than anything. We do have obfuscators that help in terms of protecting it. I think the most important thing is, keep evolving your app.
Absolutely.
Make your customers happy. And generally, unless you screw up and you have something good, that seems to win in the end. There are techniques you can do to try to fingerprint apps so that you can identify if someone has stolen your code. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes with Silverlight apps, there's typically a server involved that has some kind of unique data, media assets or something. And so as much as you might worry about client code being used, as long as your server's there and it's a sticky asset that they can't see, your app IP is usually typically well protected.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So let's go.
We don't actually obfuscate Visual Studio. So
good.
I don't believe. I'm pretty sure we don't.
Interesting.
Part is we have like 56 million lines of code. So,
a lot of which is C sharp.
Yeah,
a lot of it is.
Yeah.
You're still using some native code in there.
Yeah, we still use a lot of native code.
The compilers, for example.
The majority is still native code. Partly for the Visual Studio code base goes back to. I think it was still in grade school. The early 80s, we still have a tiny bit of code, I'm sure, somewhere in the product from that. The UI shell is WPF. Mm. The compilers are still native code. The debugger is still native code.
Sure.
So there's still large chunks. Mm-hmm. And anytime you see the UI and you say, well, why didn't they take advantage of the WPF feature? The tools options dialog is often one that people say, why isn't resizable yet? That's partly because that's not written in WPF yet, the tools options dialog. And because with Win32 resizing that, those types of controls is a nightmare, that's why we don't support the resize option. Each release, you'll see us add more using WPF, and we'll be able to take advantage of those features.
Excellent. Okay, we have to ask this because people keep asking about Expression earlier when we were talking with John and Tim. When is Expression 4 going to ship, Scott? Do you know that?
So Expression 4 is not shipping this week. We will have an update so that you can use Expression 4, preview of it with Silverlight 4 this week.
Yep.
But the final Expression Studio tools will ship in the near future.
Okay.
They're just sort of finishing up. So far we've only shown, I think, Blend 4 publicly.
Okay.
There are big updates to all the other tools in the Expression Studio suite as well that you can take advantage of. The Visual Studio 2010 tools for Silverlight 4 that'll ship this week. I think we're officially calling them an RC. The Silverlight 4 is an RTM.
Sure.
Mainly, we just want to make sure if there's any last minute bugs that people find, we have a chance to fix them, and then we'll turn around and officially make it call it an RTM, assuming no one finds any bugs shortly after.
Now, during your keynote, you had mentioned sort of the 60% number of install base.
Yep.
What does it look like across platforms? Do you have those numbers? So, for example, how many people are actually writing apps and using apps on the Mac and on Moonlight? Do we have any sense of, clearly it's dominated on Windows, or is it, so You spent all this time and effort making a cross-platform engine.
Mm-hmm.
Is it being used that way?
Well, it depends. It's certainly a lot of, typically any consumer site wants to have as much reach as possible. So for something like Netflix or the Olympics mm-hmm. or March Madness, which was last week, which was on Civilly 4 or Civilly 3, and other type of consumer-facing sites.
I should preface that, but I was sort of going towards the out-of-browser experience.
Yeah. Well, I'd say those types of consumer sites, you know, even the eBay app that we showed in the keynote, you know, typically you'll see a fairly standard split based on Mac and Windows, based on their usage share. And so, you know, Mac, I think, is, depending on the market, between 6 and 8% browser share. And so I don't have exact numbers, but I would guess that's roughly the same percentage that are hitting those sites. For enterprise apps, you typically see a much higher Windows penetration. And so for a lot of the data line of business apps, typically see those more developed and frankly, deployed on Windows. But they certainly can run anywhere.
Excellent. So let's see. We have any plans to support many-to-many relations in lazy load? This is Rhea Services question.
I think lazy load supported today, isn't it?
There are some features of lazy load supported, but not full lazy load like they have in Hibernate. And Dipesh would be a great guy to get into the details.
Totally. There. 11 a.m., yeah. Ask that question again.
I actually talked to him.
But I do know it is planned for the future.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Are there any improvements or new functionalities on Bing Maps Silverlight Control?
Well, the big improvement in terms of that's coming as part of the Bing Maps support is, and we showed this off in a video at the Mix keynote, and there's a great TED talk by Blaze, who's an architect. I mean, it's kind of inspirational talk. They're building this. They built this new Bing Maps control that is fully Silverlight enabled, fully hardware accelerated, and is just sort of amazing.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to build Silverlight apps that take advantage of it.
Excellent.
And be able to build your own Silverlight plugins that can be hosted on the Bing Maps site and integrate as well.
So you could write an augmented reality WP7 app that could just rock and roll.
Yeah.
There you go, John.
That's impressive.
Your next thing?
Here we go.
Yeah.
All right. So will there be an API? I don't want to ask that one. Do you see more Expression Blend integration in Visual Studio going forward?
Yeah, you're going to see continued support as we kind of make it easier to use the two together. Blend 3 that we shipped last summer had it added TFS support.
Right.
Nice.
And so you can basically have TFS projects and share them now between them. Obviously, we've always had project file compatibility between the two. And you're going to see even more designer integration in the future as well.
You see a lot of features like the data binding pickers and stuff in Visual Studio, and a lot of that stuff.
Even with VS 2010, like the color picker and things like that, those are the same code. And likewise, the property grid that's in Visual Studio 2010, I believe now Blend is also using. We stylize it slightly different, but it's the same code base.
Excellent. And so Hockey Data asks, what about the performance of the SL4 data grid? Silverlight 3 was very slow in displaying a lot of rows, over 100. So you had mentioned you've done a lot of performance improvements. So
in general, you shouldn't have seen slowness with 100-plus rows. I mean, I've seen demos where there's like a million rows, actually.
Yeah, that was
pretty fast. Oftentimes what I've seen, I have seen people run into is, if you have custom cells or custom data or objects that you put in those rows, make sure that your rendering performance is optimized. Mm. But the data grid controls, as well as with Silverlight 4, the list box control is now virtualized.
Right.
So we don't actually, if you have 1,000 rows or a million rows in your data grid, we're not creating 1,000 rows UI elements. We only create the 20 or so that are visible on the screen. And so as you scroll up and down, we recycle those actual UI elements to make it really fast. And so you can do that now, custom techniques with the list box as well. Built in. So you shouldn't see it. If you have a problem, send us mail and we can take a look at the app.
Excellent. Is there going to be a Silverlight dashboard as part of the toolkit? It's probably John.
A dashboard. I'm thinking maybe like a business intelligence type dashboard. I haven't seen anything like that coming out there, but I know there's some third-party tools and some things with SQL reporting services with Silverlight to do that, but nothing specific in the toolkit.
Cool. Can Silverlight be used in Media Center?
Yep, you can use Silverlight Media Center today. In fact, if you use the Netflix Media Center applet or add-in, that's all built in Silverlight and hosted inside there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So we have time for one more question. Would you like to pick one that you think is best?
Ooh, tell you what, why don't we do two? Can we do two?
We can do two.
So can fonts be embedded inside Silverlight 4 apps? Yep, you should be able to do font embedding. I think that's in Silverlight 2, actually.
Yeah.
And Abba asked, what about Arabic support for this? And the great thing about Silverlight 4 is it supports Baidai languages and Indic languages now.
Mm.
So Arabic, Hebrew, Thai, Vietnamese, Hindi, you know, all those languages you can now use within there. And we support right-to-left support with all our built-in controls. So you can even dynamically change RTL or left-to-right, depending on your language. And so languages like, say, Arabic or... and others, you know, you read right to left. All of our controls and UI interactions respect that.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. We have a great story now for building internationalized apps. Is it possible to use Silverlight 4 out of browser and read services with a local SQL database? We don't have built-in support for this, but yes, you can cache data locally, either with an isolated storage in a sandbox.
Mm.
And if you want to connect a SQL server locally, you can use the COM automation APIs that we're adding as part of Silverlight 4 to talk to ADO on the client. And so absolutely, you can save it locally.
Perfect. Well, hey, congratulations, Scott. I mean,
cool.
Amazing.
Cool. No, thanks
for
having
us. 4 releases, 2.5 years. Great to talk to you.
Cool. Thanks a bunch.
And hopefully we'll see you again in this chair next year, same time. No, I shouldn't say that. There's no time.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Great to meet you.